One of the reasons that I have not been able to do a best of 2017 is just because I have not consumed that much stuff in 2017.
I tried to make a list, and I was like, I saw maybe five things. I didn't like half of them.
And the amount of culture that keeps coming out, like, you have to consume it so quickly that if you don't consume it right away, it's irrelevant. Like, a week later, it won't matter.
Yeah, I just read the Cat Person short story.
Oh, did you?
I read it on the way here because I had it in my copy of New Yorker, and I already felt like, oh, this is, why even bother? Because everybody talked about this a week ago.
Everybody talked about it. I still have not read it. My notes right now are just names of dudes. Scott, Ted, Thor. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm Hemel Javeri. It's Culture Time. With me is my good friend and very frequent guest host, Brian Minter.
Yes, thank you. It's good to be here. I believe I now hold the record for guest hosting since I am the only one to have done it more than once on your show.
Why do you keep coming back?
You keep inviting me. That's one thing.
That's true. Which I'm very grateful that you do keep coming back.
That's really all I got. I'm sorry.
This is your fourth time? Third time?
This is my fourth time here on Culture Time.
We do seem to struggle a little bit with topics sometimes, you and I.
We do. Hemel wanted to talk about the new Star Wars film.
I did want to talk about The Last Jedi.
But I talked her out of it for two reasons. One, I feel like every single other podcast and blog and newspaper is talking about it ad nauseum, and it's just a movie. Why should we add to the cultural detritus? Two, I have not seen it.
Two, you have not seen it. Are you going to see
it? Oh, yeah, I'm totally going to see it. I wanted to see it with my lovely wife. And we've not had the opportunity to go because we have a child and a brand new dog.
Have you looked at a lot of 2017 lists? Like, have you looked at a best of list?
I love the end of year list. I look at them all.
And then I go through them and be like, nope, haven't seen it, haven't seen it, haven't seen it. Like, it's just a constant list of things I haven't seen.
Yeah, I would say at this point I've read about half of the books and seen about half of the movies on the best 2015 list.
Yeah.
And I'm going to probably get up to speed on 2016
soon
here.
I was still thinking about Oscar movies from last year that I haven't seen, and we're already past it.
Yeah, it's too late.
It's too late.
They're useless.
There's no point in watching Moonlight anymore. It's past. but my point is that it's more interesting to me to talk about why we haven't consumed that much culture outside of the fact that we're both busy professionals, right? You got a wife, you got a kid, you have family obligations.
Dog.
I mainly was reading this article in The Ringer by Alan Siegel, The Year Nostalgia Took Over Pop Culture. And it really just talks about how this has been a huge year, not just in TV, but with things like fashion and technology as well, where it's creeping back into so much popular entertainment, right? This is like the year of remakes. It's a year of shows set in the 80s. Like, everything Netflix seems to do is set in the 80s. Stranger Things, Glow, I don't know, what else?
Fuller House.
They did the remake of that old 70s show. What is it called?
That old 70s show? I don't know.
One Day at a Time.
They did not remake that.
Yeah.
Did they?
Yes.
With Schneider?
I think so. Yeah, I think that's what it's
was
called.
Was it Schneider or Snyder? It must have been Snyder.
Wait,
it doesn't make
it's
sense
the part of the Schneider podcast where I Google stuff.
Well, this has been a fascinating segment already. Did you know that Valerie Bertinelli was married to Eddie Van Halen?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess everybody knows that. Everybody who's old.
Everybody knows that.
People who I work with.
One Day at a Time. Netflix did that. But it's the year of nostalgia entertainment, and it's been very frustrating for somebody who doesn't want to live in 80s nostalgia to co-sign on that.
I was telling you this earlier. I was at we had an office holiday party, and instead of actually having it in the office, which we have done in years past because we're a nonprofit and we try to be thrifty, we had it at a restaurant. We had the whole place bought out. It was really fun. Well, I think it was donated. I don't think it was bought out. Donors. It was donated. It was not bought out. And where was I going with this? Oh, right. So they're playing, all these music. And what I was, they're playing a lot of music that, like, you're sort of Gen X, you know, late 30, early 40-year-old people like us would be into. And I remember specifically it was that the first big, back when he was Puff Daddy, the first big Mo Money Mo Problems.
Yes.
And it's playing, and all of my, like, 22-year-old coworkers are dancing, and they know every word. I'm like, wait, this was me and my friends loved the song when I was in college.
Right.
How old were you? And they're like, I was in third grade. But they know the whole song and they knew all these songs. And why don't they have their own songs? Why don't they have songs that I don't know?
I mean, they might.
I don't think they do.
Are you into Selena Gomez? I think kids really like Selena Gomez.
I don't think adults, though, young adults, like Selena Gomez. They like the stuff that we liked in college.
Well, it's weird because, so we're talking about Stranger Things, right, in terms of 80s nostalgia.
Yes.
These kids love Stranger Things. They obviously weren't born during the time when Stranger Things was actually coming out, or like were old enough to really experience 80s culture, but they still have nostalgia for a time that they didn't even exist in.
Yeah, Atari and Stranger Things and everything.
And like the new, there was this huge thing with like a retro Nintendo that came out that really swallowed.
So I've been trying to get my hands on one of those. So a classic example. I've been trying to get the retro Nintendo because for as long as I've been married to my lovely wife, she loves Super Mario Brothers. Every Super Mario Brothers game, she loves it. We have, to date, we have purchased 3 old school Nintendos. And they're all 20 years old, and they don't work.
Yeah.
And they barely work, and you give some like weird, creepy dude $20, and it doesn't even work.
Right.
So I've been trying to get one of those little things, and they sold them for $60, and now they're going for $250 on eBay. You can't buy them anymore.
Yeah, that
was... Because people are so crazy for old things.
People are super crazy for old things, and it's really, really frustrating. So 2017, to me, is the year of people being nostalgic for old things that weren't that great. And the year of really sad, depressing TV shows.
So my question for you is, oh no, my questions for you are thusly, why are people nostalgic for things from the 80s? And why does that mean that you have not been able to consume any popular culture?
Well, I think, first part first, I think one of the main reasons that people are nostalgic has to do with the people that are actually deciding what gets made. Right?
Oh, because that's the culture of their comfort culture.
That's their comfort culture. That's their dominant culture that they grew up in. It has nothing to do with the viewers, right? It has everything to do with the people who are making these decisions where...
oh my God, wouldn't it be funny if Full House was a show again?
Well, yeah, and that to me, those decisions just seem like pure marketing decisions, right? Where it's like, this was the thing that did well, and we can't think of anything new, and we need to get as many eyeballs as possible, so let's go with Fuller House.
No one was struggling to hear more stories set in the Full House universe.
Exactly. This was definitely, Fuller House is a result of the wave of nostalgia. The One Day at a Time remake is a result of the wave of nostalgia.
Right, yes. They're jumping on the already soulless bandwagon.
They're jumping on that bandwagon of, oh, people have a fondness for things. So we're not even talking about a nostalgia for time. Like, you know, there always used to be shows that were set just like 10 years back, right? Or like nostalgia for 50s sitcoms or things like that. This is a nostalgia for like just products.
Have you seen the ads for Ready Player One?
Yeah, I saw the preview for it, and I can't make heads or tails out of the damn thing.
Nor can I. I read the book, and it's a perfectly entertaining book. It's not particularly deep. But like, just watching that preview was exhausting because there's a nostalgic cultural reference in every frame. It's bananas.
I don't understand it. But yeah, I think part of it has to do with people making these shows, is that they want to go back to a time where they were comfortable. And then people who are making those decisions are our age, middle age people who have worked their way up.
Do you just call us middle aged people?
Aren't we not?
Might be middle aged. I don't think we're quite middle aged people.
I mean, how long are you planning on living, dude?
I don't know. I guess, 60 years old at the current rate, I suppose. Yeah. Maybe 58.
This took a.
I guess I'm past middle age,
We're past middle age.
Yeah, we're foot in the grave.
Yeah, that's right. So
yes, you're right.
This took a turn.
Despite the fact that you and I have not risen to control Hollywood studios or media platforms.
A lot of people have. And so this brings me to my second part. Wait, what was your second part of your question? Why are people watching or why am I not watching?
Yeah, so I buy your premise here, but how does that lead to you not, despite the fact that you have a podcast about popular culture, why does that mean you have not been able to consume popular culture?
Okay, so the reason that I think people are actually consuming these shows, like the Stranger Things, The Glow, and I fully believe that these are good shows, has to do with the fact that they're kind of anxious to, it's pretty simplistic, right? They're kind of anxious to enter into another comfortable space. The reason I'm not watching these shows is just because we didn't, like, as immigrants, like, we didn't really grow up with that same level of, like, integration into culture.
I thought you were going to say that you're made of sterner stuff than everyone else, but
I wish.
Your actual explanation makes more sense.
We came here in 1983, so we were kind of just always on the fringes of American popular culture around the 80s. So 80s nostalgia has never been huge for me. I came to Star Wars super late, you know, as a teenager, so there's none of that nostalgia wrapped up in there. So when you're not actively participating in the dominant culture, it becomes really hard to, like, reintegrate into it and pretend that, like, oh yes, this was a huge part of my identity.
For sure.
Like, and it wasn't. So that's part of it. But part of it also has to do with just this other wave of popular culture, right? Which is taking away the nostalgia stuff. The other aspect of what's been really big in 2017 has been dystopian stuff, right? The Handmaid's Tale. Game of Thrones is not really dystopia, but it's really brutal. You know what I mean? These are just not fun shows to watch. Like,
no,
this is not stuff.
They're not fun shows to watch.
They're not fun shows to watch. Like, I wrote about this for work very briefly, but one of the reasons that I didn't watch The Handmaid's Tale, like, I didn't want to watch Master of None, is that they all felt like too much engagement with the ambiguity and complicatedness of the world. And when I wanted to watch TV, I just wanted to escape. Like, I just wanted to forget about everything.
Hence your Cheers binging.
Hence my Cheers binging, which was that it wasn't even so much nostalgia because this was new to me. Like I said, I remembered that it was a thing,
right,
but it wasn't nostalgia watch. It was just, I need something that's completely divorced from everything that's happening right now.
Yeah, when
now.
I look at the TV that Wendy and I watch at home, it's all, we try, like, oh, this is the show everybody likes, let's give it a shot, and we very, very rarely keep we'll watch one or two episodes because it's a thing, and then we tend to go back to, like, oh, the thing we like from 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's kind of
proving your theory,
which is that
with the data set of two, proving your theory that for some of us, because I'm also an immigrant, as you know.
That's true.
No, that's not true.
No, that's not
true. No, because some of us, could be more born and bred. Where was I going? Yes, so for some of us, because the gloom and the doom and the tension of all of these, like, this, you got to watch the show. It's so gloomy and tense. It's really off-putting, and we want to watch 30 Rock or Jane the Virgin, things that are not like that.
So there's this essay by this cultural theorist called Richard Dyer, and it's called Entertainment and Utopia. And I'm not going to go into the full essay, but you should read it if you get a second, because he talks about how it doesn't matter. And he's basically mainly focusing on musicals in the 30s, right, during the Depression. And he said that the role of popular culture was to showcase a kind of utopia, I don't want to say realistically, not in the details, but it mattered what utopia felt like. And for a lot of these shows, it isn't so much about the details of what's going on. It's about that utopia feeling. Like, we can watch a workplace comedy or we can watch something like Cheers because it gives you that feeling of the workplace as a family, right?
So, but in the 30s, in the 30s, the dominant culture was escaping into, you know, they were escaping their dreary present day circumstances by sort of participating in this very utopian, you know, I don't know, whatever they were. Did they even have movies then? Whatever the dominant cultural forms
were. Yeah, they did
have
movies.
So if we're in a similar kind of moment socially where there's a lot of tension and a lot of economic uncertainty, why is the dominant cultural form dark rather than light?
See, I don't think that it's dark all the way, right? Some of these shows, like Handmaid's Tale, Game of Thrones, are exceptions. But Marvel movies, that the superhero genre has exploded. And I think that that theory really nicely dovetails with the popularity of these things, right? Because it isn't about the realness of, like, superheroes actually existing or the realness of can we get together to fight aliens, but more about the feeling that there will be somebody there to help you out, like somebody bigger and stronger looking out for the common good that is so attractive to people.
I buy that.
Yeah.
Can I share some reader mail on that exact topic?
Oh, please do.
So Meredith Bragg, a mutual friend of ours and apparently now a friend of the podcast, was catching up on Culture Time episodes and sent me... Was binging Culture Time at some point and sent me a lot of really long texts. And I won't read them all because we don't have that much time. But he did write, I would argue that while blockbuster studio films have become stale, they have essentially switched places with television. TV used to be the medium for culturally bland storytelling, but thanks to the fracturing of media to fill niche tastes, it is now in a second golden age. And then he goes on and on and on. But he's basically agreeing with here that these big blockbuster superhero movies have become the cultural white bread that we can all agree on and not be challenged by, and that's good, or at least what we want. Or the market once, and then TV is now the place where
we used to have art house films, but those art house films are rare, and now you have Handmaid's Tale, which was very popular. People loved it, and I'm sure there's other shows. I just can't think of any.
Wait, that are dark, intense, and gloomy?
Yeah, there's Handmaid's Tale. There's Game of Thrones.
All of the the
Americans.
Superhero TV shows are kind of they're not that good, but they all are sort of in the dark and gritty and the
Well, The Walking Dead, I find myself at the end of the day exhausted and from having to deal, engage actively with the problems of the world. And the last thing I wanted to, when I sit down to watch TV, is engage more with the problems of the world.
Yeah. And then I'm thinking of some more, there's that show Longmire. Mm-hmm. There's the guy from Deadwood who had a second Wild Westy show.
Westworld.
Not Westworld, but I don't remember the name of it.
American Gods.
U.S. Marshals in the Old West. It doesn't matter. But yeah, they're all very bleak and dark.
Yeah.
And I could watch one episode of all of them and be I don't want to go and watch any more of this.
Yeah. The article that I wrote was that I picked this British show, Escape to the Country, as my best of 2017 because it's just fantastic.
I've never heard of it.
Oh my God, it's amazing. It's just pastoral countryside. It's like a house hunting show, but they take these charming British couples who are looking to buy a house in the country and they tour houses like you would on any house hunting show, but they intersperse them with little tidbits about village life. And then at the end, the couple very rarely actually decides to buy the house because the show's not staged. It's just three people. It's just people randomly looking at houses.
That would not play in the States.
No,
you
it would not
have a reality show where they don't buy the house.
But that's why, I was like, oh, this is perfect. It's the ultimate way to kind of unplug from what's actually happening.
We, watch Fixer Upper as a family.
Yeah.
It's a great, it's not great. It's a reality show, but it's a good one.
It's a good one.
Fair enough. But my 5-year-old daughter watches it with us, or watches it with, Wendy once in a while. And, I don't think she's watched a lot of it, but the show is so formulaic and repetitive that she was watching it with us the other day. And they go into this old house, and the woman's like, oh, I wonder what's... And before she could finish, Elliot went, hardwood floors! Just as excited as could be. Because the lady on the show is so crazy for hardwood floors.
Yeah, Chip and Joanna Gaines. I know it well. Everybody knows it well.
Yes, I guess everybody does know it well.
Okay, well, can I just pause for my speculation about Fixer Upper, which is this is the last season.
Uh-huh, yes.
And I'm pretty sure they're going to get a divorce.
No. Why would they get a divorce?
Because are you watching them on Netflix or do you have HGTV?
No, we're watching whatever. If Netflix is a year behind, then that's what we're doing.
Okay, so if you're watching this current season, I have been watching her reactions while Chip is talking, and she could not be more displeased with him if she tried. So those two are on the road to Spitsville.
He's so charming.
Watch this episode. Watch this current season and look at her reactions while
he's
talking.
She's had enough of him.
She's had enough of him, yeah.
Plus, you can tell they're becoming moguls. I doubt they ever really did half of the stuff they seem to be doing in the show, but now I think they have a castle and a TV channel and a magazine line, all that stuff.
All that good stuff. But can I backtrack to our superhero conversation for a second?
You can. I don't remember it, so you may need to give me a refresher.
Well, no. I not our first one, but just what we were just talking about.
No, I mean, that's the thing I mean. I don't remember. We're covering a lot of terrain.
I mean, I hope our listeners can keep up with it. No, our initial point about superhero movies working as kind of like the musicals did in the 1930s as a form of utopia, which is brings me to what you were talking about with your brother Scott.
Yes, so I saw Thor,
yes,
Ragnarok. I enjoyed your episode about it, and I would agree it was one of the better ones. And my brother, you know my brother.
I do.
Your listeners probably do not know my brother. He's a free soul. I'm trying to describe him without sounding like I don't like him, because I do like him. But he's not very plugged into popular culture.
He really follows the beat of his own drum.
Yeah, I won't get talking about him too much because I'll sound exasperated. But he's not someone who watches a lot of TV.
Yeah.
He's not someone who goes to a movie once a year. So, we're at my dad's house for Thanksgiving, and he's there as well. And Wendy and I are like, oh, we want to go out and see Thor, and, you know, and you know, Dad can keep Elliot. And he's like, oh, I'll go to the movie, sure. And we get there, and I really, we're standing out. He's like, what's this about? I was like, oh, you know, Thor. He's like, oh, right. But then I realize he's thinking of, like, classical mythology Thor.
Right, like
Norse god Thor that he remembers from, like, the encyclopedias we had when we were kids. And the things were all, I was like, oh, no, it's a comic book movie. He's like, oh. And he didn't even know what I meant by that. Like,
How can he live in the world like that?
So we're the movie, and he enjoyed the movie, which I think is the selling point for the movie, right? You can enjoy it without knowing all this ridiculous IP mythology,
right?
But at one point, I realized maybe we saw a trailer for something, but I realized that he didn't understand why Batman couldn't be in a movie with Thor. And to me, that was blazingly obvious, not just as a kid who grew up reading comic books, but just as someone who goes to the movies. But I was thinking about how, like, if you didn't know that, it doesn't make a lick of sense.
Yeah.
And each of these two studios are essentially making the exact same movies, which you would never get away with ordinarily, but we're all like, all right, we agree to this.
So in Scott's defense, I would say before Marvel movies became popular.
He'll never hear this because I don't think he knows what podcasts are.
I mean, that's okay. You can text
you don't
him
have
about
to
it.
Defend
no,
if
no,
you
no.
Want to.
Well, in Scott's defense, I think that I would have also not really understood why Batman and Superman can't be in a movie together before.
No, Batman and Superman can.
Oh, I mean,
although they shouldn't have been because it was the
Thor,
worst movie ever.
Whatever, like Thor. Yeah, that was a terrible,
terrible
movie.
Terrible. They're all so terrible.
In his defense, yes. In his defense, I also would not have understood like why Thor and Batman can't be in the same movie. Obviously, DC Universe is separate from Marvel Universe. But that's not a thing that I would have known until this stuff became so pervasive.
Yeah, because it doesn't make any sense.
Right, because it doesn't make any sense.
Why are superheroes in these two different boxes?
Yes, there are superheroes that are in these two different boxes and they can't really exist together. So in his defense, yes, I could totally see that. But now, just understanding the cultural landscape, it's so, like, it's such a thing that's talked about constantly that I can't imagine people not knowing it.
I don't remember who this was, but I was talking to someone a few years ago, and they had never seen Top Gun. Mm-hmm. And maybe now that's not weird for someone who's, you know, in their 20s, but at the time, and it wasn't like, oh my God, Top Gun is so great, you have to see it. It was more that, how did you grow up, how did you live through the 90s and not just see Top Gun by osmosis? Just playing endlessly
somewhere.
On cable somewhere.
I totally agree with that.
Are they remaking Top Gun? They probably are remaking Top Gun.
I think they're making like a sequel. Like, I'm not kidding about that.
Just, don't they have any new ideas? Are there no new ideas left?
They're making, they already remade, or they're continued X-Files. They're thinking about rebooting The Office, which is a huge mistake.
I feel like that just went off the air.
Yeah.
That's another thing. The reboot cycle is growing increasingly close on the heels of whatever the original thing was.
Well, do you think this, I love talking about Marx, but do you think that because we've been able to open up our means of distribution and production, that we're actually running out of ideas?
No, I don't think that remotely.
You don't think so?
No, I think it's the exact opposite, or maybe it's not the exact opposite, but it is that because the desires of capital and commerce increasingly dictate entertainment and artistry, there's no resources, there's no investment for someone who has an original story. If you came in and said, hey, I want to make the story and it's about this, you know, it's about a giant house that's on the moon and there's these, you know, the birds made of mustard seeds, whatever it is, that's a terrible pitch. That pitch shouldn't
get
made.
I'm never making that movie.
Right. Nobody should. Let me start over. If you came in with a completely original idea that was set in its own universe and it had its own internal rules and required its own suspension of disbelief, and I came in and said, what if I just made another version of this thing everybody already likes? There's no reason they would ever choose your thing because my thing is more easily able to be successfully marketed. There's an audience for it. Your thing, there's no guarantee.
I mean, I agree with that point. I do think that people are making different kinds of things. That's not the majority of what they make. There's still some space for that. But one of the things that is now almost has to happen is the potential for sequels and franchise development, right? Because
how can this be 10 things instead of the one thing?
Right. Well, people do want things that they're familiar with. Right? They don't want to go and learn all about new characters and a new plot line only to forget about it in 2 hours and never engage with it again.
But that's what movies were for all of their
existence. That's what they used to be. And now it's becoming like you can't have that. It needs to be like 10 different movies spaced out over 8 years.
Yeah, but
something.
It sounds like you're saying that is what the audience wants. I think that's what the audience is being given because that's what the corporate paymasters want.
I think that's the easiest thing for audiences to engage with.
You know, you mentioned Stranger Things earlier. Did you watch the first season?
I did not.
It's
just, I mean, it's just not a thing that appeals to me.
Yeah, fair enough. It was really, it was a great story, and I feel like they didn't have much of a budget, so they had to kind of recreate, like, instead of saying, like, oh, let's get a bunch of 80s music and 80s stuff, they had to say, well, what's the vibe? What's the feel of that stuff? And they had to recreate that, which is really neat. And then the new one, which I was excited to watch, I abandoned pretty quickly because, A, they have enough budget now that they're like, oh, let's just buy a bunch of rights to all these 80s songs. We don't have to create our own original, like, creepy synthesizer score. We can just buy all this stuff. But also, what made the first one so great is it was a story of, like, normal, everyday kids, and they encounter some horrible thing. And they're like, oh, my God, the world is not what we thought it was. It's a horrible thing. And it was ended, and it was perfect, and it should have been done. Like, oh, you know what? Everyone likes it. Let's do it again. But the essential premise is ruined because now they know that there's this horrible other dimension and it ate their friend.
Oh,
and,
no.
Well, yeah, it was sad. But
yes.
That's my point, that like the very premise of what made the thing good is by definition not going to happen if you just do it again.
Right. You can't replicate it.
Yeah.
And that's what people try to do all the time is replicate.
Don't do it, people. Fight back somehow. I will say that one thing that was nice about the first Stranger Things was really good. We really liked it. And one thing that was nice was that there were no recognizable actors. And there weren't even any particularly good-looking actors.
Yeah.
They're kind of a wambly-looking bunch of people, which is refreshing.
Well, that's what I thought about the first X-Files, is that Gillian Anderson now is incredibly hot, but when she first started it, she was
very kind of frumpy.
Yeah, she was like kind of frumpy, normal-looking, and David Duchovny is not who I would call traditionally handsome.
Keaton, Ted Danson. Well, no, I know you have. Yeah. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I feel like he's a handsome man. Let's not go nuts.
Well, he's a handsome guy. But your point about Stranger Things not having money and having to solve problems creatively is interesting. I was listening to this podcast with Guy Ritchie, and he kind of said the same thing about how movies are made today. And this is especially relevant. He obviously wasn't talking about Justice League, but if you've seen Justice League, it fits nicely into it, which is that he found that creatively throwing money at something was the worst way to solve a problem. And when he was like a beginning filmmaker and he didn't have a huge budget and he had to be really creative, that's when the best stuff would start to come out. But now studios, like if you're a director as big as he is, will give you more money. And he realized that was just shortcut to lazy filmmaking.
I totally buy that.
And I thought it was a really good argument, but it fit very well with what I thought about Justice League.
Yeah, it was a $300 million garbage movie.
Yes, like they threw so much money at this horrible, horrible thing that it turned out awful. Like they took every single shortcut development thing possible and they still made a shitty, shitty movie.
And imagine what you could do with $300 million instead of make a garbage movie.
You could save some small countries, I bet.
You could save a small country. You could make 10 good movies.
You could make
or
tons
save a small
of,
country.
Yeah, you could make tons of really good movies.
Do you know about the mustache thing? Does everybody
know
about the mustache thing? All right, we don't want to talk about the mustache thing. If you don't know about the mustache thing, I want you to enter Superman mustache into the internet. That is a tale of late-stage capitalism run amok.
And that's exactly what I was actually thinking of, which is that instead of figuring out a creative way to solve this problem, they just threw a ton of money at it and said, just CGI the mustache out.
Yeah.
And it looks terrible.
Superman would have had to get a job as a bartender and grow a mustache.
Yes.
And maybe that would have been more interesting than him just being a whiny jerk. Oh, that movie was so bad.
It didn't make any
sense at all.
And
you know what drove me so angry? We don't need to talk about that movie too much.
No,
but
we can.
Watching that movie, knowing they spent $300 million on it, the character designs are terrible.
Oh my God, they're awful.
You could have sewn better costumes in your house.
Yes.
Why? How can so many people be involved with that with unlimited resources and just put that kind of garbage up there?
And that's exactly what it feels like, which is that unlimited money and absolutely no creative vision, and you get Justice League.
Just a stinker. Not even, what's her name, the Wonder Woman lady could save that.
No, she tried her hardest,
she is radiant. And I don't mean that she's attractive. She's a very attractive woman, but she just seems to glow.
Yes.
It's nutty.
it's crazy. Gal Gadot is just, she has this like weird aura about her, and it just comes out.
Kate McKinnon, Saturday Night Live, does an impression of her. I saw on the internet the other day. It's funny.
It's
very
good.
Funny. Yeah.
All right. I feel like we talked a lot about me and why I don't watch things. We haven't even gotten to you.
Why don't I watch things? I watch things. I don't, you know what I don't do is I don't, I read a lot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you do read a lot.
I read a lot. So I'm going to give myself, I'm not going to beat myself up for not participating in popular culture because I think that's probably more valuable than TV. But when it comes to TV and movies, I probably see more movies than most people with a 5-year-old. But it is kind of hard. You know, you have to get a babysitter or you have to find time to go by yourself. And TV, like I said, we try to watch all that stuff and we just end up watching, like, oh, let's watch the thing we already know we like. So you're asking why that's the case?
No, I mean, I'm just curious if there was anything else. I know I feel like 2017 was not a huge shift, but it was a shift in terms of cultural consumption for me because I had to make, I didn't want to feel bad when I sat down to watch movies or TV. And so that meant kind of staying away from a lot of
Game of Thrones.
Oh, shit. This is what I wanted to talk to you about.
You can't say shit on the air.
Sorry about that. You can't actually.
I apologize, FCC. Oh, the FCC doesn't know about podcasts, do they?
Yeah, you can check a little button that says explicit content and it's fine. So sorry if anybody's listening with their kids in the car.
Yeah. This is the reality, kids. It's bleak and it's dark.
So
it's a chess game of murder.
Wait, so this is what I wanted to get to.
I've been interrupting you as hard as I can tonight. I'm sorry. And not for anything good either. Not for like an insight or even a relevant thing.
Really hope people are at home just being like, Brian, shut up.
I'm sure they are.
Wait.
I can't hear them though, so it doesn't matter.
I want to talk about that. I feel like you're my therapist right now. I want to talk about why our unwillingness to maybe engage with deeper forms of art, right?
And,
like deeper.
How does that make you feel?
Not. You're just here for punchlines. But our unwillingness to engage with these deeper forms, right? With these shows that are objectively probably really good and dealing with thematic elements that deserve to be talked about and explored, how they relate to what's happening today. Is that bad for us as a society? Like that I am just turning on and just wanting to engage with like the house hunters and fixer uppers of the world.
But other people must be watching. So you're not doing your part.
Well, I'm not.
People must be.
I'm taking a break from engaging with difficult art, right? Like I'm taking a break from that. I'm not talking about Game of Thrones, right? I think that's just violent.
There's so much murdering in Game of Thrones.
Yeah. There's a lot of difficult.
Murdering.
So one thing that we did watch this year was all 17 hours of Ken Burns Vietnam War. And that was...
There you go. You're doing your part for the culture.
Right? And
someone's
got
to watch that stuff.
Holy moly. It was incredible. It was totally worth it. But it felt like work. It felt like every night we had to commit to watching 90 minutes to 2 hours.
So that's actually, I think...
Of just like human atrocity over and over again.
This is a more... So maybe the reason why I think... That triggered made me think of why I probably don't watch some of this stuff. It's much more prosaic, but the idea of it being work.
It's work.
But yeah, I think the way I tend to watch TV is I've got my computer open or I've got the paper if I didn't read it and Wendy's got her computer open and like we're doing other stuff.
Yeah.
And I read this interview once with, someone who wrote for Law & Order and they said, we are writing assuming our audience is also doing the dishes. So we need to write it so that there's not anything you can't miss,
right.
And you kind of get the feel for what it. Even if
and
you're
like
kind of
every
tuned out.
Scene kind of recaps what happened before. Or
yeah,
something.
So I think the way I'm going to watch TV at night is that way.
Oh, okay.
Whereas at the movies, I can like there's nothing to distract me there. Like
right.
I like going to the movies because I know I'm going to focus on whatever the thing is.
Yeah.
So that's not as important as the thing you're saying.
No, no, no.
But it's still the idea that like, oh, I don't want to do work. I just want to half pay attention. And
yes.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine is perfectly fine for that.
One of my huge pet peeves is being on your phone and watching TV at the same time.
Yeah, we did that. I'm on my laptop when he's on her phone and there's a show playing.
Yeah, it's to me, I find it hugely, hugely frustrating. Like if I find myself...
Wait, it's frustrating when you find yourself doing it or when someone else is doing it?
No, I mean, I don't like if other people want to do it, that's fine. But for me, like I'm in front of a computer all day. I'm on social media all day as a part
so
of my job.
Come home and do it at night.
So if I'm coming home and doing it at night is like either I need to put my phone away or I need to turn the TV off.
I do that, though. And like, I think to myself, like, oh, I've been in front of a computer all day, just like you said. Why am I on it again at night?
Well, so this is, it sounds weird to be like, well, I want to be mindful when I'm watching TV, but I want to be mindful when I'm watching TV. Like, there's so much, I feel like everybody says there's so much good TV out there that if I'm scrolling through tweets or Instagram stories while something is playing, I'm not doing TV right.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I get my laptop out, like, you know, after Ellie goes to bed and, you know, we're kind of just chilling out for a little bit. I get my laptop out because I'm usually busy enough at work that I don't check Gmail or Facebook or something. I meant to do this thing. So I probably have 10 to 15 minutes of, like,
yeah, you have
personal
more time.
Internet connectivity I need to do. But then the way the internet is built to just administer all these dopamine hits, it's 60 minutes have gone by and I'm looking at, you know, a Wikipedia article about elves or something.
Yeah, well, I think that makes it harder to engage with difficult stuff. You're like, well, I need to check Facebook. I need to do Gmail. I can't watch Ken Burns 17 hours of the Vietnam War right now.
It's... Facebook is destroying the culture in so many ways.
Oh.
You're exactly right. I agree.
That's
it really
perfect.
Is, though.
Anything else we didn't get to?
Did we talk about Ted Danson?
We talked about Ted Danson.
Did we talk about Ted Danson enough?
I don't know. Is there ever such a thing as talking about Ted Danson
enough? I worry that when the annual Ted Danson podcast awards are handed out, we're going to come up short on some kind of time cap.
Have you ever watched The Good Place? Or you said you couldn't get into it, or Wendy couldn't.
Yeah, so this is, if you're married, you may understand this.
You got to watch TV as a couple.
Yeah, you got to watch TV as a couple. So Wendy's like, oh, I watched that, I didn't really like it that much. So it's kind of off the menu for me.
Mm.
Not that, you know, she'd watch it if I really wanted to. But yeah, that's another thing. You tend to gravitate to the thing you both like.
Yes, I'm not married, but I do live with my sister. And we separate our TV viewing. Yeah.
What does that mean? Does it mean you each get to pick a thing or you watch separately?
We only have one TV in the house, but we obviously have our own laptops. So if she wants to watch something different, she'll watch it on her laptop. And if I want to watch something different, I watch it on my laptop.
So how do you decide what goes on the main TV?
Generally, just stuff that we agree on watching together. If not, then it's, I like CW's The Flash. I think that's a fantastic, delightful show.
Huh.
It's built for a younger audience, like teenagers, but she's not into The Flash, so she can do whatever else she wants for that 2 hours where
is there a show you both really like?
We have some shows that we really like. For a while we were watching The Walking Dead, but now neither of us feels like catching up on it because it just feels, again, like work. Cool. Anything else?
No, I think we've exhausted 1,000 topics at the most shallow level possible.
I don't think so. I think we got a little deep in a lot of stuff.
But... Well, we'll know when we get the reader mail for this episode.
That's true. I can't wait for Meredith to fact check this.
Yeah, Meredith, please send me 17 really long texts. Or just go on Facebook. We really need some audience engagement or Hamilton will get canceled.
That's true. Or Meredith should just leave it on iTunes. Just leave us reviews about how wrong we are. Thank you guys for listening. Brian, thanks for hanging.
It has been a pleasure once again interrogating this American culture with you.
Bye, guys.